Welcome everyone to this interview where I'm super excited to be talking with Dr. Judith Orloff. And we're going to be talking about empaths and highly sensitive people and the relationship with trauma. And I think a lot of people will identify with some of the qualities and aspects that we're going to be exploring. We'll also cover some of the practical ways that you can help bring more balance and more equanimity. So just to introduce Judith, Dr. Judith Orloff is the New York Times best-selling author of The Empath's Survival Guide. Dr. Orloff is a psychiatrist, an empath, and on the UCLA Psychiatric Clinical Faculty. She synthesizes the pearls of traditional medicine with cutting-edge knowledge of intuition, energy, and spirituality, and specializes in treating highly sensitive people in her private practice. Her latest books are Affirmations for Empaths and Thriving as an Empath. Dr. Orloff's work has been featured on The Today Show, CNN, Oprah Magazine, and in the New York Times. So firstly, Judith, welcome back. I always enjoy our conversations. Thank you for making some time.
You're very welcome.
So why don't we just start a little bit with some of your journey to working in this field? What got you so interested in doing the incredible work that you've done of raising both awareness but also giving strategies for people that identify as being empaths or highly sensitive people?
Great question. Now, I'm a psychiatrist and I supervise residents at UCLA in the psychiatric training program, and I'm also an empath. And so I combined my traditional medical knowledge, which was 4 years of medical school and about 6 years of psychiatric residency, you know, plus the pre-med. I combine all that and I value it and I use it along with empathic skills. And empathic and intuitive skills are different than the linear training that I had that was more biologically based, and we were taught to give medications and have biological interventions for people experiencing all kinds of issues labeled as disorders in the DSM-5. And of course, I don't use the word disorder. It's not something I really believe in, you know, in terms of categorizing people with disorders. I look more at people going through life experiences and spiritual challenges that need to be addressed in this life. And that's part of it. So I'm a psychiatrist, I'm an empath. And the way I got into this was I was an empathic child. And I was an only child of two physician parents, 25 physicians in my family. So lots of
that's got to be some kind of world record, right? I mean, that's something.
It was amazing. I mean, they're really good healers. I mean, devoted people in their various fields of radiology, family practice, you know, all kinds of things, but lots of physicians. But I didn't want to be a physician. I was more creative in writing. And I was on the edge, you know, of various things. I was never in the center. And so I didn't want to be a physician like my parents, because I was bored basically by their friends, which at the time friends were really important. You know, so I, you know, didn't think I'd become a physician, but then I started getting into my dreams and my intuitions. And I had a wonderful mentor named Dr. Thelma Moss at UCLA. And I had a dream where a voice came to me and told me, "You are going to become a psychiatrist to have the credentials to legitimize, you know, these abilities, these intuitive empathic abilities in medicine." And it was a simple, clear, crisp voice, no argument in the dream, but I woke up and I thought, what? And, but because I was beginning to trust my intuitions, I enrolled in a course in Santa Monica City College. And just one course became two, became all my years of medical training, because I followed my intuition of the dream, even though my mind didn't believe it. I didn't, there's no way I'm going to do this. But, you know, I had the dream. I wanted to start trusting myself. So there you go. I enrolled in a course when I had dropped out of school, you know, and just was living with my boyfriend in Venice Beach and working in the towel department in the May company, and then studying a little parapsychology. And then so I enrolled, and here's the result. I love that.
I've never heard that phrase before. Studying a little parapsychology, just like little hobby on the side.
It was, because I always had that in my nature. I had predictive dreams. I was able to sense. Now we'll talk about empaths and trauma, but I was always an empath, and an empath is somebody who is super sensitive, super intuitive, comes from their heart, loves to help people, loves nature, connects with animals a lot of times, but they don't have the same barriers around them, protection that other people have. And so we tend to get overwhelmed by other people's energy just on a regular day, you know. But if you have trauma added into that mix, and you have narcissistic, alcoholic parents, you have, you know, neglect, you have the various kinds of trauma that can happen, that rips open an empath's kind of defenses and makes them feel so raw and overwhelmed and hurt that their sensitivity allows them to be traumatized and re-traumatized again unless somebody comes in and offers a support. And so, unfortunately, a lot of empathic children don't have any support. And they're stuck with these parents who are doing the best they can, I guess, but the child gets traumatized. And part of the healing from trauma as an empath is dealing with the childhood and developing ways to protect yourself and ways to set boundaries and a whole healthy network of skills that we can talk about for your life, so that never happens again to you.
I just want to amplify a point you made a little bit as well, because I think it's going to really resonate with a lot of people, that because of course trauma is not just what happens, it's our capacity to respond to and meet what happens, along with how it's responded to in the environment around us. And the point you're making around empaths or highly sensitive people don't have the same barriers or boundaries or protections. And so maybe say a bit more about really the consequence of that when traumatic experiences can happen.
Well, it's like I lift this up. This is a cup. It's like I have 50 fingers instead of 5. I'm feeling the cup. I just use this as an example. I'm totally involved with this cup and I'm feeling it. I'm the sensual aspects of the cup, the energy of the cup, the shape. I mean, I'm integrating all that at this moment. And most people pick up the cup, drink, put it down, nothing happens, you know. But for me, because I'm very sensitive to energy, anything I touch is an experience. Whereas non-empaths don't necessarily have that same experience. And I want to make clear, I am not saying empaths are better than non-empaths. It's nothing like that. It's just a different personality type that, and an energetic way of relating in the world that you need to know about if you're an empath, or that you love an empath, or if you suspect that you've experienced trauma. As I know, growing up as an empathic child, as an only child, I had no support, really. My parents said, just toughen up, dear, get a thicker skin. You need to get stronger to survive in this world. And to a sensitive little girl, that means nothing. You know, that's like, I'm not that way. And you're trying to tell me to toughen up. I don't know how to deal with any of this. And I don't know how to articulate it. And not only that, trauma can come at various levels. It doesn't have to be extreme, brutal, physical, or emotional trauma. I was traumatized just by hearing my parents argue all the time. Now, I was in my bedroom alone, and I would hear them arguing in another room. And so in my adult life, I'm triggered when I hear people arguing. Because I had no idea what was going on. Why are they arguing? What's happening? Why don't they explain it? Nobody explained anything. And so the trauma, the more, if you want to say minor compared to the major traumas, that can linger into your adulthood, and they can affect your relationships, so that you have emotional triggers to certain things. And so, you know, that was just one area of trauma. for me, the yelling, which is very hard for me to take because I'm triggered by it. And also empaths have a sensitivity to loud noises or any kind of abrupt, sudden, loud, horrible sounds. It just feels awful in the body.
Yes, yes. I also wonder those more covert traumas, like the less perhaps dramatic and obvious. I wonder if I'm thinking out loud here, so you can correct my thinking if I'm going down the wrong path. But it strikes me that in some ways to an empath, they may almost be more damaging than the really big events, because the really big events may well unlock a certain amount of support and response from people around. Whereas those more covert, subtle things are having that impact, but they're not unlocking perhaps the support mechanisms that are needed. Is that right, do you think?
That's so right. Because we're affected by things. Maybe things that other children aren't as deeply affected by, but because as empaths, we don't have the same protection or the same barriers, so we feel everything. Our feeling, our emotional empathy is very strong, and our hearts go out to people, or we get frightened by things that we don't understand. And then if you're left alone with that, then the mind could make up all kinds of things like, I did something bad, they're yelling about me. That's what trauma can do, or the children just make things up that aren't accurate. And so it's important, if you have a history of trauma and you're an empath, to really backtrack, and just look. Don't judge yourself as you're taking an inventory and looking back and seeing areas that might have frightened you as a child that maybe you never admitted before, or you think, oh, I shouldn't have been frightened by that, such as my parents yelling. Or it could be a chaotic household where your siblings were just fighting all the time and you were this empath and you couldn't get away from it. And you were overwhelmed in that sense of being trapped that many empaths who have trauma experience. They're trapped. And so then fast forward into their intimate relationships, guess what issue they have to deal with? It's feeling trapped. which is one that I've dealt with. So I'm familiar with it. And I just want to say I'm just tracking various kinds of trauma right now, but there are all kinds of techniques to use for this, to successfully be in relationships and not be triggered by the trauma. But you have to make it into your awareness first so you can deal with it. And sometimes these events, people forget their childhood. It becomes a blur because, particularly if it's traumatic, it's just a protective mechanism that the body has to keep things at a distance. Some people have no childhood memories that I work with in my practice. They just can't access them, you see? And so, although I don't ever encourage people dwelling in the past and staying there as they used to do in psychoanalysis for 10, 20, 30 years, they're still back there. It's just, no.
but I think also sometimes another way I want to look at this is that because empaths and highly sensitive people are being knocked a lot by life because of the sensitivity, things are impacting them. I wonder if sometimes can almost get normalized to being in that state, and then not realizing the impacts that traumas have had, and therefore not necessarily really doing that healing work because one's almost just normalized to that state of being triggered and being activated.
Mm-hmm. They're hidden traumas, and they're often forgotten traumas that get put underneath. And what the empath grown up might experience is anxiety, and yes, they don't know what that's related to. But if you go back and you see, if you're able to, it's not, you do it at the right moment. This is not for everybody to go back. Sometimes when you're just aware that you've experienced trauma and you're getting used to that, in your psyche, is that something you want to get used to? It might be premature to go back and dive right into what happened. It has to be timing. You don't want to do anything prematurely when it comes to trauma. There has to be something in you that says this is the right time. I want to do it. And if it gets too intense or too overwhelming, you can stop. You can take a step back. You can do anything you want. You're in charge of this. You see, so it's, you know, when you work with a therapist, and I suggest that you do, if you're talking about, you know, even large or small traumas, the process of uncovering the little, the smaller traumas, the larger traumas, it's like a mapping, a mapping of the system, of the psychological system that happened from a very young age. I mean, I believe that trauma starts in utero. I mean, that's how I perceive it, because who knows what the mother's doing? If the mother's drinking, if the mother's using drugs, if the mother isn't exercising, if the mother's eating a lot of fries and burgers, now that it's not intentional trauma to the fetus, but it is trauma. The fetus is, if you really think about it, the fetus is within the body of the woman. And everything is connected. And so you might not think of trauma in that way, but I do. I do. And the birth process, how was the birth process? You know, how did, you know, the little empath come out with the hands out? Some of them, the hands out feeling. Some empaths, they'd come out like this, you know, with the hand out because they're feeling. You know, and others have a harder time coming out. They're a breech, or they're a C-section. And I was a C-section, so I never had to go through the birth canal, which I miss. I needed to get that, you know, I think that stamina, but it wasn't in the cards for my mother because she has some health problems. But it's useful and interesting to go back and review your birth history if you know it.
Yeah, I'm also interested, as you're talking, Judith, just thinking about the relationship between how much of being an empath is something we're born with, and how much of that is actually shaped by trauma and by life experiences. And yeah, what are your thoughts on that?
It's a great question. It can be a couple of answers. Some empaths come out that way. They're inborn temperament, they're born, they're sensitive babies, they're sensitive children, they're sensitive, hopefully, teenagers, or they sometimes they try and shut it off as teenagers, you know, just they don't need it anymore. And then they re-blossom a little bit later on. So some are born that way. Others are really created from circumstances. Now, you can say an empath comes in as a pure empath. And if there's birth trauma, then here we go with the beginning of the trauma cycle.
Yes.
So, but with trauma work, I think it's important, you know, the rebirthing and getting back to the original birth experience is really important. I had an analyst who did that with me years ago, where he put me in hypnosis and took me back to the womb and what it was like for me, you know, in the womb. And if you can remember it, you know, sometimes you need to go into hypnosis. But if you're interested, I'm really interested in the human psyche and how we operate. And so I have been into therapy. I've been, you know, into all kinds of healing techniques my whole life. It's something that interests me for me. And so if it interests you for you, it just depends. Whoever is listening, the way you know it interests you, you see if it resonates. They're like little blips of, ah, I relate to that. I relate to what she's talking about. And that's where you start. Yeah. With those little blips of interest. You don't force yourself ever.
Well, I love exploring myself and inner work. And I sometimes think some people go and watch a football match and I get a therapy, but that's just how it goes. Could you say a bit more about some of the signs and some of the ways that trauma shows up more uniquely or more specifically for empaths and highly sensitive people? So some of the signs and some of the things that they might observe.
Yes, I'll get into that. But I just want to say sometimes football is therapy for people.
I hear that. I hear that.
So, you know, hold a lot of space for how people get help.
I mean, just to take that point slightly more, you know, people joke about, but it's a very, I know it happens in other countries as well, but it's a very British thing for men to want to go to the pub and drink beer. But of course, the interesting thing is that that's a way of connecting, and it's a way of sharing one's experience, and it's a way of having a support with other people. And so, as much as you know, I'm glad you picked that point up, because I was being a bit flippant about something that actually really does have a place of holding and support for people.
Absolutely. People find their comfort where they can, you know, and as long as you're not an alcoholic, going to a bar is amazing. It's, you know, I remember traveling through the UK and Ireland, the bars are so cozy. They're amazing.
Quite vibrant as well.
Yeah. So the whole, you know, a lot, everyone who's listening, I hope you can, you know, give people a lot of space for what brings them comfort. As you know, it's this life has a lot of challenges, and especially if you're going through healing trauma. So you find comfort in a football game, you find comfort playing golf, you find comfort at the beach, wherever you do, just be thankful you can find it.
Yeah.
But in terms of how trauma manifests with empaths, well, I just want to say an empath is a super sensitive on the spectrum of empathy. It's they are sensitive, they absorb the energy and the emotions of other people, whereas a little bit down the line, the highly sensitive person, a little less absorptive, but tend to be overwhelmed by sensory overload. So their, you know, lights, sounds, smells, touch, it's just noise, or even energy, it's too, you know, they just get like the, it's too much. Their systems are wired neurologically differently, and the empaths can have all the sensory phenomena like that, but they also have this absorptive phenomena that happens. So it's just a, you know, it's not better or worse, it's just a little bit more sensitive on the empathic spectrum. And so when empaths come to me in my private practice, they often come to me undiagnosed. Because they've been through the medical system, you know, they've been having anxiety, depression, mystery, medical symptoms, mega workups of MRIs, blood work, scans, everything, because they just feel so horrible. You know, they're exhausted. They might be extremely anxious or extremely depressed or just tuned out or on sensory overload. So they have all these, you know, really disturbing symptoms that traditional medical science is trying to figure it out, but they can't because they don't have the perspective of being an empath. All right. They have a missing piece. So that it's less so now than when I first started, you know, educating people about this, but it's still, you can't really expect your internist to know unless you talk to them about it and ask them about this. But in any case, the symptoms that they experience, you know, can be the anxiety disorder, the depression, chronic fatigue, because empaths get overwhelmed. And empaths on chronic overwhelm and undiagnosed empaths can become pretty tired after many years because they're so bombarded by everything and they just don't, they haven't figured out on their own why that's happening and how to stop it so they can enjoy the beautiful, sensitive creatures that you are and your connection to nature, love, giving, the sky, the earth, the water, people, baths, empaths love baths. You can't enjoy the parts of being an empath because you haven't been diagnosed correctly and so you don't know what to do. So that's why I wrote the Empath Survival Guide and their 20-question self-assessment test in the beginning of that book that you need to take, because it will tell you how much of an empath you are, or if you're an empath. Now, you might not be, but most likely you are if you're listening to this and you're going, yes, yes, yes. I know what it's like to speak to audiences where the heads are just bobbing up and down the whole time.
It's like if you lasted this long in the interview, something kept you in this interview, right? And there's probably a clue there.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So take the 20-question self-assessment test. See if you're a full-fledged empath, which is answering, I think, 17 to 20. A moderate empath, which is answering about 11 to 16, and then maybe just a slight empath. But even if you only have a couple of empathic qualities, like, for instance, you prefer being with one or two people rather than being in large crowds, or you get overwhelmed by noise, smells, or excessive talking, which is very common for empaths. So you take on the stress of people you love, where you're actually feeling their anxiety, where you can get a stomach ache listening to another person share their stress because you're vibing with them. And, you know, in fact, the mirror neuron system is thought to be on overdrive in empaths, the compassion neurons, because they're just turned on. Empaths want to help everybody. And it's too much. So part of recovering from trauma and recovering from being an empath and not having any skills is learning how to set clear boundaries for yourself, learning how to identify situations that are going to drain you or harm you in some way, and set up the boundary or say no or reorganize yourself so you don't keep putting yourself in situations that are going to drain your energy, your serotonin, the natural antidepressant in your body. And you don't want to be bombarded by stress hormones, adrenaline, and cortisol, which happen when you're on overload. All right. So as an empath, you have to get diagnosed correctly. If you've had trauma, the way to diagnose it is to go back and remember as much of your childhood as you can. Just peruse it and see, where did I feel uncomfortable? What was it like being in the living room watching TV with my family? You know, what was that like? You know, or what was it like driving in the car with them? Because I know the car was a terrible place for me because they'd argue in the car. You know, and when you're an empath is stuck in a car, you can't get out. It's the worst unless you, unlike some of my patients who I suggest they actually do get out of the car if the spouse won't stop yelling or abusing them in the car, this insulated area. I suggest they say, please stop and go and take an Uber. And I've had patients who do that. They say, honey, this is out of control. I got to get out. So sometimes you have to do that. And yeah. You see, as an empath, you have to be prepared to do unusual things, you know, in terms of self-care. You can't be nice and polite all the time. Just can't. You've got to think about yourself. What do I need? You have to develop inner dialogue and tell yourself, all right, I'm in this situation now and I'm not happy. What can I do to take care of myself or get out of it if I can't? So I'm always talking to myself in various places if need be. Like I'm my best friend. So I go to myself and I ask myself questions. All right, this isn't so good. What should we do here? So I have an internal conference with me.
I guess one of the challenges I think for empaths in doing that is because they're sensitive to the impact of their actions and they're feeling the impact on others, that sometimes the putting in place of boundaries or the saying no or the saying I need this, or take your example, can you please stop the car? I need to get out. That very action in of itself is, of course, what feels so challenging and so difficult. And so I'm curious as to how it sounds like you've got some real skill of knowing what you need and practicing advocating for that. But when you're working with people that are earlier in that journey, what helps them kind of break out of those patterns?
A lot of times we do the psychodrama together, where I'm the one who's imposing on the boundaries and they're the ones who are setting the boundaries. So I can really get into it, you know, being the one who's imposing on their boundaries, and they have to develop a voice, first of all, to set a limit with me. And it's very hard. Their voices crack. They start crying. You know, so you know, I get to go through all that with them until finally a little squeak comes out, you know, or a little word or something. And then we just work on it until, you know, they're actually speaking sentences saying, no, that doesn't feel well. It doesn't feel good to me. And I said, well, I don't care what feels good to you. You know, you have to do it. You know, so I could really get into being that person for them. And I'm a safe person. Yes. So they know it's me.
So, in a sense, what they're doing is they're practicing as a skill, right? Like that, they're getting, learning to feel safe and comfortable with doing that in a safe place to then be more able to do it in a less familiar place.
Right. And I want to say you can do this with safe friends who are supportive. Maybe somebody can help you, you know, with that. So, and just tell them how awkward you feel. It's a very vulnerable position you put yourself in to set your boundaries if you've never done it before, and especially if you've had physical abuse. If you've ever set a boundary in the past and somebody has hit you because of it, or, you know, somebody, you know, done terrible things, it's very hard to get it to come out. But that's okay. I mean, that's part of it. And you need tender, loving care of other people around you as you're experimenting with being the person you always deserved to be and behaving with every, you know, you deserve to set boundaries. But when you practice, a mistake my patients make is they always try and want to start with their mothers. Wrong. Don't do that. The mother's the hardest one to deal with, or the father. But don't start with your mother. Start with somebody really easy if you're setting boundaries. Somebody, I don't know, somebody who eats with their mouth open, or maybe that's so easy. That's not so easy.
Talking about meeting place.
I don't know, whatever irritates you, where you set your boundary, you know, with somebody, where you just say, you know, a good one is, you know, just some quiet time at home to be able to tell people, if you live with people, you know, just I need to close my door now and just be quiet for a little while. Thank you for helping support me with this. And they say, what do you mean you're going in there? If you, you know, so it depends who you're dealing with, but hopefully you try the supportive ones, the more supportive ones, and you just go and have that quiet. But sometimes when an empath is resolving trauma, even if they set the boundary and go in the room, they're going to feel afraid or nervous, which is okay. It's okay, but it just takes practice, and little by little, the speed that you go at is much like a turtle, you know, very slow, very careful. Don't shock your system. It's fine. There's no rush. You can't rush yourself through this, and you can be as private as you want about this process. No, you don't have to tell all your friends that you're doing this, you know, but it's, know that it's a very deep process of healing for you. Now, there's a certain trauma just to being alive. No, it doesn't compare to the intense trauma of physical or emotional abuse, or being raised by narcissistic parents. But life isn't always easy. And so there are various kinds of trauma that could come along other than earlier trauma, just early trauma. You know, the trauma of losing someone you love, you know, and how to deal with loss. That's very, you know, these are big, big things. So, but the healing from trauma needs to be slow. If you're an empath, number one, you need to realize you're an empath, and you're an empath healing from trauma. You're not a non-empath healing from trauma. A non-empath might have some different needs than you do, all right? But you have these sensitivities that are precious. You have this connection to life and to energy and to nature and to your own intuition that you need to strengthen. And you talk to the flowers, you know, you talk to the sky, you know, you might try and hide it, but you do it. And it's a beautiful thing. And I want to encourage you to do more of it, to do more of what your nature tells you to do. And it does hurt tremendously going through trauma treatment, you know, but it's, in a way, it's good hurt, because it will help clear the trauma from your body, because sometimes the trauma lodges in various parts of the physical body. Now, you have to know your vulnerable point. Mine and many empaths is my solar plexus. Now, when something is off, or when something scares me, or I feel uncomfortable, I get a stomach ache, you know, and it's always been so since I've been little, and it's much less so. But when things, as an empath, when traumatic events take me by surprise, those are the hardest ones. You know, the ones that you sort of see you're coming, or if somebody is going to be passing over and it's a longer process as opposed to a sudden process. It's the suddenness that goes in me. Empaths need time to process things. They prefer processing time, and they don't like to be surprised by some horrible event that happened. But however, sometimes it can't be prevented. And some people just go like that. I had a very close friend go suddenly, you know, last year, and it's very shocking to the system, anybody's system, but it's traumatic every time you lose somebody. It is, because we love so deeply. You know, we love very deeply, and I want you to appreciate that and channel it towards people who can love you back, which is another issue, because sometimes there's self-inflicted trauma that empaths bring upon themselves when they get involved with narcissists. Because there's a toxic attraction between empaths and narcissists have what's called empathy deficient disorder. So they're not wired in the same way to feel empathy. And as empaths, we've talked about this before, but I think just it's an important point for everyone to know, is that empaths are susceptible to these people because they reel you in with love bombing and all kinds of promises. And the minute you don't do what they want you to do, they become cold, withholding, punishing, gaslight you. And it's just a terrible situation, and it could take years and years to dig yourself out of. So I just want to issue this as a warning for empaths, particularly if it's repeated trauma. And you, let's say, had a narcissistic parent, and then you choose a narcissistic mate, and then you divorce the narcissistic mate, and you choose another narcissistic mate, as they're different. This one will be different, you see. So beware of that pattern so you can take better care of yourself and your relationships. And if you do have to go through that pattern, be very kind to yourself. Have a witness state as you study it. You know, educate yourself about narcissists. See if this behavior fits in. Notice this irresistible attraction to them that you might have. But the healing from traumatic upbringing from narcissistic parents requires that you go back to your relationship to the original parent and see what was going on with that, so you can detach and perhaps cut the bond, energetic bond, with the unhealthy attachment.
And I think there's something also, just to amplify something you're saying, that there's something very powerful about seeing how that dynamic is repetitively playing out, to the point that I guess it's almost, if someone has that pattern and hasn't done the healing work to break that cycle, that there's something to almost become suspicious about the attraction in the first place, because it's an attraction towards an old dynamic that I guess is familiar, but it's not healthy.
No, it's not healthy. And there's also, it's what's called an autoerotic transference that goes from the father to the mate, because probably you had some kind of erotic connection with the father that you associate with a mate. You know, as children, you know, at a very young age can develop these erotic attachments to the opposite parent, or same-sex parent sometimes. And so it's you have to be careful. But the way to heal the relationship with the current narcissist is go back to the original one and begin to feel the grief and the trauma and the trauma healing of what you didn't get from that person, and how you so needed it.
Yeah.
And you so deserved it, and you didn't get it. So I'm a believer in surrogate parenting. I've had 4 surrogate mothers in my adult life who have just filled in where, you know, my mother wasn't able to give me. I didn't have the bohemian mother, you know, the bohemian hippie mother. And I found one, and I didn't have the, you know, communist, rebellious, outrageous, I don't care what you say mother. You know, so I had to.
You had to go and find one.
They're there. Surrogate parents, for those of you who are doing this trauma work and you have narcissistic parents, they're very limited. They're not able to give you unconditional love. And as much as you deserve the love, you must realistically see what they're capable of, so you don't keep going back to them with your heart.
Yes. Judith, I'd love you to say a few words as well around the gifts of being an empath, because I'm mindful that we've been talking about the challenges that they face and some of the ways to work with that. But it's easy for one to become fixated on what's wrong, but there's also so much that's right. So maybe you could just speak a little bit to that.
There's so much right about anyone who has sensitivity or empathy or cares about each other, the human race, the animals, the little creatures, that we care about what happens on this planet. And you matter to me. I care what happens to you. You are not alone. And empaths help to create that loving net that holds the world up, you know, through their love, their connection, their innocence sometimes, their goodness, their lack of pretense, their wanting to heal, wanting to give, maybe too much so, need to learn techniques to protect self and self-care, the gifts of intuition, the gifts of hunches. You know, when you get an inspiration in the morning, to take some time in the morning, maybe 3 minutes, to meditate or just get quiet and ask the loving spirit of the universe to guide you, to guide your day, and to know that it's very real. Know that you're able to get beyond this mundane world, which is pretty interesting, it's in and of itself, but to get beyond it to an energetic world, to a different world where it's really a world of the heart and a world of expanded perceptions of consciousness rather than just this world that we're in. You can have different states of consciousness, and that's the joy of being an empath. You get to explore that. No, I mean, I look at a tree when it's moving like this, and I'm mesmerized. And I was with a non-empath friend. I said, "Don't you see it?" He goes, "No." Of course he doesn't.
But it's also, it strikes me that, you know, I think that, you know, a lot of the people that I work with therapeutically, part of the reason they come to therapeutic work is because they can't feel, or they're not in touch with their feelings. And so it's easy to remember that yes, being highly sensitive can have its challenges, but so does not being able to make contact with feelings and emotions.
That's true. And there's emotional contact that people can make, and there's subtle energetic contact, which is a bit different, because empaths can observe the world in a much different way. If they take the time, all the empaths out there, if you want to do this fun experiment, if you take the time to slow down as you're walking down the street and really look at things, you know, really look at the leaves, look at the little flowers coming up in the cracks in the ground, you know, feel the energy of people walking by, feel the sky, feel your position in the universe. Now, there's a wide range of sensory experiences that are open to you that help you feel connected to all living things. So you could be going to an appointment, you know, you're in New York City, walking down the street, going to an appointment, but you could be doing all this in the meantime. Or, you know, if you're in a residential neighborhood or somewhere where it's quiet or where it's a little easier, slow it down. If you want to experiment with expanded perceptions, you have to slow everything down. Empaths are often hypervigilant, so they're always scanning their environment to make sure it's safe. That needs to be a little bit, you have to be aware of that, but slow it down so you can observe life and you can begin to see the vital energies of life, the subtle energies of life that you're able to see as an empath if you begin to train yourself. And it's magnificent. You know, at night after I meditate, I just look out of my window and it's just spectacular. You know, I just look at the night and the stars, and I have ducks in front of my house, so I hear the ducks, and I see, hear, feel the wind. You can use multi-senses to experience it if you focus yourself. But empaths tend, especially if they're traumatized, tend to be overly serious and worry a lot. And they clamp down and they are unable to shift. They're staying in that state. So what you need is a consciousness to come in every day. you know, and ask yourself, am I in that state of being overly serious? Is everything so heavy? Is everything a problem? You know, all right, that's fine. Don't beat yourself up for it, but shift out of that and look out the window. Just look at this earth. I mean, most people miss it because they're so involved with, you know, their problems and everything, which I understand. I mean, me too. I mean, I can relate to that, but don't miss what's going on here. And empaths have a chance to experience that great beauty with their sensitivity and experience great love of life and a connection to all of humankind. So if you're an empath and you can deal with the trauma, whatever you went through, but also know that there's this other world that is within you, and it has been all the time. It just hasn't been nurtured, so that you can have more play and experimentation and creativity. Once you get in touch with your nature and you don't feel that someone's going to squash it or hurt you.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I'm mindful we're out of time, but I want to ask you in a minute if people can find out more about you and your work. I also want to highly recommend your book, The Empath Survival Guide, which I know was a big international bestseller, but is a really important book, I think, for people to understand, to help them recognize if they have these qualities, but also to have some pathways towards help. But yeah, say more about where people can find you online, and also
that is the initial book, The Empath Survival Guide, the foundational book. And my website is www.drjudithorloff.com. And I have an empath support newsletter if you wanted to sign up and just get tips and tricks, you know, each month for dealing with being an empath and enjoying yourself and learning how to set boundaries. And my workshops and online courses are also on drjudithorloff.com.
Fantastic. Judith, I really appreciate your time and wisdom today. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.